September meeting. Welcome, everyone, to the September meeting of the MAGFA Amateur Astronomers. Thank you, Nameless Voice, that tells us recording in progress. First of all, I would like to thank everyone for coming out. Second of all, I'd like to direct everyone's attention to the variety of snacks and treats that George has brought out. I suspect his report as the Refreshments Committee leader is going to be George. Well, truncated, considering he, last time it was purely to remind me that it's better to remind people of the refreshments before we've already been going for 45 minutes. So go ahead, please get coffee, snacks, treats, and remember that the refreshment committee funds are replenished by us contributing. So feel free to toss in a dollar in exchange for the cookies so that George can keep trying to kill us through sugar. All right. I'm going to go ahead and start off as normal with a our officer and committee reports. So without further ado, I turn you over to our vice president.
Thank you. All right. Let's see how quick we can get this. Let's see. Put this on minimize. I can't do it that way.
That's new business.
Okay.
You're making me hungry now. Yeah, I'll try to get it.
You can avoid the doors back there?
All right. Okay. Here we are on Thursday, September 4th. This Saturday, Sunday, Elizabeth River Park. And I'm going to bring my solar outfit. I hope other people will do that Saturday. Does anybody not know what Saturday, Sunday is? We look at the sun on Saturday. So that's why we call it Saturday, Sunday. Okay. Anybody need any further information on that?
Great fun.
Yes. Corn Watch on the 12th, Friday, and Sky Watch, Northwest River Park, on the 13th, on Saturday. So that should be pretty good. I think the moon will be, I don't know, not visible until late. So that's good, because the moon, the last quarter was on the 15th. The East Coast Star Party, which I'm sure we'll have another discussion on that, is from the 18th going through Sunday. It goes continuously till Sunday. So that's going to be a fun trip at Chipoak State Park. On the 19th, public night at East Coast Star Party. We still got Cornland, but I bet everybody, instead of going to Cornland, is going to go to East Coast Star Party. If you haven't signed up, we'll give you directions soon. Saturday, the new moon is the 22nd. Chamberlain Stargazing, that's at the Chamberlain Hotel, I believe it's in Hampton. And Fort Monroe, that's right, it's Hampton, I don't know. And I don't know how many people are signed up. Let's take a peek here. Okay, we do have a few. We got two yeses and one probably. So that'll be a fun trip. Fly me to the moon. They wanted to do it when there wasn't any moon visible. So I talked them into making it this day. I think it's going to be a waxing crescent. All right. How do I get back? This thing's in the way. Get out of the way. Okay.
You opened a new tab. You can't go back. Oh, yes. Correct your old tab.
All right. Astronomy Boot Camp. That's going to be at the rec center?
Chesapeake Planetarium.
Ah, okay. I've forgotten about
it. This is the first official programming that the Chesapeake Planetarium is doing, other than partnering for the Saturday, Sunday, and Skywatch. We're going to, I think right now I've got 25 people signed up and at least 6 on the waiting list. But we're going to gather out there, build planispheres, teach people how to use planispheres, and if anyone's that interested in bringing a telescope and looking around, helping people learn how to use the planispheres, just looking at stuff. Happy to have additional assistance. Happy to have club members that are there to help make planisphere for free if you don't have one of your own.
Are we going to be rolling out the C14?
We are going to roll out the C14.
All right. Very good. That's a 14-inch telescope.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. All right.
To Kent, at least 100,000 people have looked through that telescope.
Very interesting.
And it's probably a lot more than that, honestly.
Okay. So that's good. Astronomy by the River. Forget where that is. Let's see. That is... What river is it, though? Harbor's Edge, Southampton, Norfolk. Okay. It's a retirement community. All right.
Right next to Norfolk General.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, very good. So we need some volunteers for that, too, if you haven't signed up. Garden Stars on the 30th. Please sign up for that at 8 o'clock at Norfolk Botanical Garden.
There's a special speaker on that night.
There's a special speaker other than
Jeremy Mitchell.
Jeremy speaking. Okay.
I'm the minor leagues for George, but I'm willing to pinch hit.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay. In the month of October, Kempsville Rec Center, Astronomy 101, and it hadn't been rescheduled, so that's another one.
Assuming that they're going to have their power fixed by then.
I'm sure they'll have by October.
Soon. Should have.
Yeah.
That topic is going to be, what is an astronomer?
There you go. Club meeting again next month. And I'll just do a few more so we can continue the meetings. Saturday, Sunday on Saturday. And IOMN, that's the moon something?
International Observe the Moon Night.
Observe the Moon Night, right.
Rich.
And that's at the Chesapeake Planetarium.
ODU Planetarium is going to be, what's that?
Did we get permission?
We got permission.
Okay, cool.
Okay. And so it says ODU and Chesapeake are planning to provide sites. Not both places, it's just one.
So ODU is going to be coming out and helping support.
Oh.
There's a football game, so I can't do it right there.
I see. So it's only in Chesapeake. Gotcha. Okay. Excellent. All right. So you got Rain in Science, and that's REIGN, and that is, that's at ODU. That's right. Couldn't think of where it was. That's at ODU Planetarium. Okay, so that'll be fun. STEM activity tables and things like that. And hopefully we'll have some indoor-outdoor things. Indoor, we'll have a table for us. And outdoor, maybe a few telescopes. And what time is it? I forget. It's during the day, so at least we'll see the sun, I hope. If we don't see the sun, you don't have to worry about the telescopes. All right. Columbus Day, Indigenous People Day, all right. Corn Watch, Sky Watch on the 18th at Northwest River Park is, I think, our biggest attended event in the public anyway. Chaos Fall, let's take a look at that. What's Chaos Fall?
Stan River Star Party.
Yeah, Stan River Star Party, okay.
Is that
Stan? Chaos stands for the Chocolate Hill Astronomical Observational Society.
You guys are good with the acronyms. I'm glad you're here to help me out.
It is the greatest acronym.
And then Cornland and Night Watch again on the 25th. Garden Stars on the 28th. Any questions for me? All right. I do have name tags while I'm up here. I've got name tags for the new people. But the newest people, evidently, I don't have the name tags. I'll get the newest people that just joined next month, I promise. Okay. And let's see. What else can I say? That's about it. Stop share. I'll let you guys do your thing.
Thank you.
What's your chat?
Oh, Jeff, we have chats.
Hey, I just want to say real quick too, these name tag things that Jeff is doing, thank you. Because staying on top of that, it's a pain. It really is. If you've ever made these things or not, it takes a minute. I mean, we bought that machine, so thank you for doing that.
Sure. Yes. Thank you, Jeff, for doing that. Labor of love.
And of course I can bring one.
I don't need it.
Mine's in the car. So.
Okay. With that, since we talked about the work that we do as a club, let's talk about the money that pays for it and setting us up for the money that we're going to spend. Rich?
All right.
Ball cap, though.
Share my screen here. Right. Am I sharing?
We don't see it yet.
It says that you started screen sharing. There we go. Got it now.
Oh, it's finally showing. You see my Excel spreadsheet?
Yeah.
All right. So we got a little over $11,000 in the across all accounts. That's an increase of $104 for the month. Most of the money coming in came from East Coast Star Party. We did have some expenses related to East Coast Star Party, but we didn't have much. You know, we had some t-shirt supplies. The Spivey Porta Johns was the big one. And then Jeremy bought a few things for our Dew Heater Workshop. But we didn't have a lot going out. And we did have 6 new members in the month. So that's been a big uptick. We kind of had slacked off for a while, but we got several in this month. So we're up at 194. At the end of the month, we've had another one join since. And the money, right after I closed the books, we actually had a lot of East Coast Star Party money come in. So if you see I switched to East Coast Star Party, see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of these came in the last few days, in the beginning of the month. So we've brought in almost $2,000 so far in East Coast Star Party related funds. And we spent about $1,200 so far. So, yeah, after the food and everything, we should come out ahead once again for the Star Party. But that's all I got. Any questions?
Questions in the room? Oh, well, everyone thinks about it. Rich, we did our last Boardwalk Astronomy for the year. I'm assuming, since that was earlier this week, I'm guessing you haven't.
Oh, yeah. That's a good reminder. I can write that down to, so I can send that invoice out. How many did we do? Did we do 5 this year?
We did 5.
We did all 5, okay.
Now, the first one, or maybe the first two, their dates and our dates were misaligned, but was someone there who acknowledged it in some way, shape, or form, so we should be able to invoice for all 5.
Yep, that's what I'll do, and we'll go from there.
Awesome.
We took photos to make sure. That we
yes.
Next question.
Yes.
So that's the Boardwalk Star Party. So what type of income or expenses do you face on those events?
So great question. So Boardwalk Astronomy is an event that we put on because we're contracted with the company that does
ongoing events.
Ongoing.
I'm going.
Okay. They're the company that the City of Virginia Beach contracts with to have entertainment on the boardwalk. As far as actual expenses that we incur during Boardwalk Astronomy, it's really just us going out there. Sometimes we can argue that some of the banners that we have made for it are expenses associated with it, but largely it's really just members' time. The income that we get from it, though, is they pay us, and I believe that money all goes to our scholarship.
It all goes to the scholarship. It's fun. So we actually don't use it as a club. If you saw that spreadsheet, I have 3 accounts. That $11,000 that we have, that's across 3 accounts. That's our general funds that funds our activities, primary scholarship, and Georgie June scholarship. So pretty much Boardwalk Astronomy pays for our primary scholarship. And then Georgie June, we fund through raffles and donations.
That's a good question. Yeah. Is it 500 per, I think? Is that right?
Yeah, it's 500 per.
Yeah. That's a good use of time. It's also it's enough money that it makes you look outside and say, it's going to be cloudy tonight, but I guess I'm driving to Virginia Beach after all.
Yes.
At least that's happened to me twice this summer.
There's never a chance we're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is the first time we've done all 5, I think, in a while. Usually it's
you've played a long time.
Well, didn't we end up getting a 6th one last year?
I don't remember.
Or was it the year? There was some year we got an.
We got paid for 4.
Was it the year before?
The year before we got 4. Yeah, it's been kind of our going is 4, but 4 is good because that gives us enough to really get that scholarship paid.
Awesome. All right. Any other questions for our illustrious treasurer? Okay. Take a motion to accept treasurer's report. Been moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Approved. Thank you, Rich. All right. Speaking of wonderful reports that we accept, Gabe, do you want to discuss the minutes from last meeting?
Yes, I can. So, long story, in summation, the Rocks meeting was held here on not really much else to report other than that a couple of people are completing some observing programs. Ben Loyola, who's here tonight, through the asteroid observing program, while Mr. Jonathan Sheets finished his lunar observing program and his lobster cluster observing program. I have some old business and new business, we'll get to that in just a second. And then Ben had a wonderful discussion about his citizen science endeavor to locate near Earth asteroids. And that was extremely fascinating. Talked about ultimate the detail or ultimate basically uses with observatories to locate these objects, and it was a very informative presentation. But that's really all I got.
Okay. Quite topical, that last bit. Any questions, comments, concerns, additions, or subtractions? In that case, I'll take a motion to accept the minutes as briefed.
I make a motion for a
motion and sound like a second. In favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Gabe.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to then turn things over to our world-famous astronomical lead coordinator, who is joining us via Zoom, because he is not feeling well. But his presence is missed.
Okay, I'm going to try to share. Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a lot of windows open, but that's kind of like my life. So this is the Astronomical League website. For those of you that are new there tonight, may not be familiar. The Astronomical League is currently, as of 2025, a nationwide consortium of about 300 clubs and currently has 23,000 members nationwide. The website is astroleague.org. And as you can see here, there's lots of cool tools that you can click on to see what's going on with the Astronomical League. The one I like to use the most is the September Night School, the Night School Sky Tools right here. And what that looks like is this. And hold on. A lot of windows. But anyway, it looks like that. And you can check out where the celestial equator is, where the ecliptic is, star hop amongst all these different other objects. And I find that this is a great tool, for beginners as well. So anyway, check that out. And that's all I really have for the Astronomical League. And I've already congratulated people that have finished programs in the Reflector magazine for June. So I'm just waiting for the September issue to come out, and we'll be able to announce some more pins. That's all I have for Astronomical League.
I'll just make the point. The reason, Bruce, if you didn't know, Bruce brings that up is because you are a member of the AL Astronomical League, whether you knew it or not. Every member of Back Bay is part of your dues. Are paid to Astronomical League every year, so you're a member.
Yeah.
And you can do all the observing programs. So,
I used to be treasurer. So, and
we lost him.
He looks surprised.
Oh, there he is.
Requesting transition to East Coast Star Party.
Negative. We have an alcohol related topic that I'd like to do first, then we'll let you transition to East Coast Star Party.
Oh.
So, one thing that Bruce mentioned is that people accomplish some observing programs, and as a member of the Astronomical League through the club, you're entitled to do some of those. They're a great way to help you figure out how you want to bin your observing. We have amongst us an advanced observer who received the award for asteroid observing last meeting. And in fact, I would like to call Mr. Benito Loyola to the front of the room to congratulate him on two more. He is the 36th intermediate level and the 37th advanced level for targeting near-Earth objects.
Cool.
So did you know that this was better? Oh, okay. So congratulations. The handshake.
Excuse me,
buddy.
Hey, Robin, could he stop sharing?
And a pin for your near-Earth objects.
Kind of look cool.
It does. It does look pretty cool. And here's, there's actually spare copies in there.
All right, cool.
That's cool.
So that's awesome. I love to see people getting their opportunities to get recognized for some of the great observing we're doing. Some of them are ones that encourage us to learn. Some of them, especially ones like the near-Earth objects ones, are opportunities for us to learn for society and, in fact, to teach everyone that, no, in fact, that object that we think is coming to hit us isn't really going to. So whenever you hear that on the news, you should take it with a grain of salt. Now, so congratulations once again to Ben, and now I will say the Astronomical League portion may conclude, and Bruce can talk about a star party.
Okay.
Wait, sorry.
I didn't realize this, but they added this to the thing that says that the target NEO's near objects list supports all spacecraft missions to near-Earth asteroids.
That's awesome. So, like the DART programs?
Yeah, all that stuff. They land on you. Pick up samples and all that stuff.
That's awesome.
So, and anybody can do it. You don't have to have a permanent observatory.
Unlike the asteroids.
You've got other techniques, that's all.
Okay.
So, and some of the asteroids are bright enough that a 3-inch refractor can do them.
Okay. Maybe you can help us find some at the East Coast Star Park. And that's how, unfortunately, I drive people away. That said, I'm really done, Bruce.
Are you really? Okay. All right. Can everybody see the screen? Yes, no, maybe.
Confirm.
Yes.
Okay. So this is Sean Lozier's, you know, most awesome East Coast Star Party website, complete with time-lapse, really cool photography by courtesy of Mel. Anywho, check this out. So as been mentioned, the East Coast Star Party is the 18th through the 21st of September. All of your questions very likely will be answered on this website. So feel free to shoot me ones that you don't, or questions that you can't find the answer to on this site. I have recently talked to the ranger at Chippewa State Park, Trevor Johnson, and he is looking forward to working with us once again, like he did in the spring. So check out that website. I will go over the schedule, which I shot out a while back, and I handed this out at the September meeting, excuse me, the August meeting, but I'll also post it on Facebook if you need to look at it. So the schedule is on Thursday, the 18th, registration opens at 2, visitors began arriving, and then we have all night observing and free coffee. And September 19th, which is Friday, we have a public observing night. There's a spaghetti dinner at a time to be determined. Please notice that the local sunset is a little bit after 7. So if you're going to drive about an hour and 15 minutes out to Chippewa from Hampton Roads, be sure you leave by about 5:30, because we've got signs all over that park lit up by nice lights put there by Sean Lozier. But amazingly, people still drive into the campground and go, hey, where are the telescopes? So it's easier to find us when the sun is still up. There'll be free coffee all night long. If there's rain and clouds, I will once again do a drawing presentation at the conference center. And for all the times of how all this is going to go down, we'll post them at the registration tent. So Saturday, September 20th, 5:30, we'll have a hamburgers and hot dogs potluck at the observing site. We'll be doing a raffle prize drawing, and that'll occur after the cookout. And then we'll be doing all night observing and free coffee all night long again. And then the The event ends on Sunday at 11 a.m. What I'd like to call your attention to here is that you really do need to register no later than 8 days from now on September 12th. We do this so we can figure out how much food to order and how many other things we need to buy to make our party a success. And the rest of the information you can read on your own. So what I will say is, if I can find it fast enough, shoot, I have some really cool raffle prizes, and I had this all queued up. Dang, where is it? Oh, no. Anyway, High Point Scientific, I've got lots of really cool raffle prizes. I've got a power tank from Celestron. I've got a eyepiece kit from Celestron, a couple of eyepieces. I've got a nice 70-millimeter, 2-inch eyepiece. Got some 20x80 binoculars. And last but not least, you can be like George Reynolds and win the short tube 80 refractor telescope that we got with backpack. Okay, and then I've got the usual selection of books to illuminate your journey in astronomy even more. So anyway, that's all I have. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, nothing heard. I yield the floor back.
Right.
My distinguished colleague in person.
Thank you, Bruce. We appreciate your all of your hard work there. And I would like to add one item not reflected on that sheet is that if you are going to register, we appreciate you doing so by the 12th. If you want a T-shirt, we ask that you order and register by the 6th so that Sean and I have time to order the shirts and print them so that they're, you know, ready for the star party. We've learned our lesson to not wait till the last minute on that.
So. Do you want to cover the shirt right now?
Yeah. It's written into the business. I'm trying to be better about agenda discipline. All right. Ben, do you have any updates for the scholarship committee? It's kind of quiet.
We're still waiting for final numbers towards the end of the year.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Sorry. Oh, do we have anyone new joining us tonight for the first time?
I'm almost new.
Yeah.
I attended a meeting in June, but I became a member.
Okay. Well, we were thrilled to have you. Barry was kind enough to join us at the Boardwalk Astronomy. It was a great time. We had a lot of fun. So a plug, join, come out, have fun with us. It's a great time.
We've got a lot of members, but a lot of them are just joiners. Hey. We need more participants you guys.
We would appreciate more participants, largely because we want to share the joy of astronomy and the joy of sharing astronomy with other people. I will plug in that regard that one of the greatest things is you can only see Saturn through a telescope for the first time once. But you can see the light and joy in somebody else's face. They see Saturn for the first time many, many times. So come out and join us at some of those events. Point the scope at something cool and take the opportunity to enjoy that bit of secondhand wonder.
Tuesday night, I had several people that had never looked through a telescope at all before. They saw the moon for the first time, and they were blown away. They loved it. It was like you said, to see the light in their eyes. And the joy that comes from the telescope, it's worth having for it.
Of course, if the moon is not behind a cloud and you have a big enough telescope, then you see the light of joy and the light of blindness in their eyes. But that's funny, too. So, okay. George, do you have anything for the refreshments committee other than a plug that you have snacks?
But we still have coffee.
Okay. I would plug that to everyone out in Zoom land, except you probably don't want us to mail them to you. I will also say, as the I still haven't found someone else to give it to, chair of the nominating committee, we have elections coming up, which means people are going to stop answering my emails and texts here in the next couple of months. But we do have elections coming up for treasurer and vice president. If anyone is interested in either of those roles, please feel free to reach out to myself or to either of the incumbents, Jeff Goldstein or Rich Roberts. It's a lot of fun to support a bunch of good people. Okay. Observing reports. Does anyone have an observing report other than the ones that we've already kind of halfway gone through?
Got to see Saturn for the first time.
You saw Saturn for the first time?
Enjoy. This year.
Oh, yes. Yes, Saturn. Yeah, there, and a lot of people last night, I think, saw the shadow transit of Titan, the third of, I think, five?
I think there's four.
There's four?
I think there's one more.
There's at least one more, yeah. Yes. They usually start sometime in the wee hours of the morning, and they'll go actually past sunrise, but we'll be seeing it after that. George.
Speaking of seeing Saturn, I do a lot of presentations, and one of the presentations I do is, I ask the question, how do these computers know where that, or what that is? And I just tell them, it's just like learning your way around a new town. You get the map, and you drive around, or you drive around, and then you look at the map and see where you've been. And so it becomes second nature. I don't even look at the street signs anymore. I just know the streets. Same way with the stars. I can look up in the sky and just say, oh, that's Saturn. I know that's Saturn because I can tell where it is and its color and everything like that. But it's just the experience, and it's a lot of fun.
I'd say this weather has just been spectacular for the last week. It's incredibly clear. I don't know how we keep this going. Let's try.
You had to say that. It's going to get hot again tomorrow.
Yeah, ruin the focus.
Anyone else? Okay. Things went sideways. In this case, literally. Okay. Good enough. Okay. So, some items of old business. As we mentioned, the International Observe the Moon Day, but Gabe took care of that, so I will just mark it off. Library Telescope Program.
Yes, I went to the Central Library. All the telescopes were checked out. In fact, I got an email back today from the person in charge saying that they will let me know when the telescope comes in so I can go check it out. They had two. They said one of them was never returned. So they're down to one. But they also said such a popular item that the library system bought 10 more telescopes and passed them out to the other libraries.
Virginia Beach.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're definitely going to need some help.
So I sent an email back, said, let me know if those other 10 telescopes were adjusted for library astronomy, and if not, we can take a look at them.
Yeah. Did they tell you if they got the same type of telescope, or did
it say?
When I checked with the Chesapeake Library, City of Chesapeake has a library telescope for every library, but those library telescopes are the $25 Amazon Special Hobby Killer style telescopes. So perhaps a goal for next year would be, I might be to put together a plan to try and get a good quality library telescope in every library throughout the region. I think that would be a noble quest. Maybe not accomplishable in 1 year, but I think it would be something for us to think about as supporting our mission. So thank you for that update, George. As you find out more, and if you find out you need additional assistance getting those telescopes tuned up, please let us know. Or since I hornswoggled you with this task, feel free to pass it off to someone else if you don't necessarily want to tune up 12 telescopes. So,
George, did we make labels or instructions or something?
Yes. Yeah, each telescope, at least the one that we gave to the Central Library in Town Beach, it's got a chart or a thing on it stuck to the side and it doesn't come off. How to use it, what to do, and the eyepiece is
firmly mounted so it can't be taken off. And, certain other things or adjustments are fixed so they won't be messed with.
Excellent. I just got a new CNC machine, small one, but a CNC machine. So if we need to make any replacement plates for that, it'd be a good good use to try testing it out.
It kind of tops a 3D printer. So
well, it's not very big. We'd have to print really small, but we'll see. Little router. So what was the great thing before 3D printers came around?
How many axes?
I think it's a 3-axis. So I haven't. It's actually still in the box. I'm ashamed to say it arrived this past week. Okay. Other items that we had for old business. Sean, I don't know if you want to put out any updates on the banners, but I think you placed orders.
Order.
Okay. Banners ordered. Order. Great.
Can you describe this?
It is a 4x4 foot banner with NASA's new 2025 version of our magnetic sun that we enlarged to be 4x4 foot. And then also we got our club name on the top and a QR code for our links. You know, Dan let me use one of his photographs so I can make a star field behind it, things like that. But just basically their banners just expanded because it. When they sent us was this big.
Yeah.
It will not fit on the frame we made to put the banners on. It's too small.
And the other downside is we learned this past week that there are some changes coming to the Night Sky Network, including they're no longer going to be sending out some of the outreach kits. So anything that we need to replace or anything that we want as far as printouts go, supplemental stuff, we're going to have to do that out of Hive now. Because NASA doesn't have the funding that they used to. We are still going to have access to the Night Sky Network, but a lot of the freebies and things that we've gotten from them in the past are going to dry up at least for a while. They are working to find ways to turn it back on.
Did you get the link?
It's your drop.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. We ordered a 15-foot feather flag, and it's NASA. One flag was $344, and then the stand was $60.
Okay.
And I will be able to use that one stand, I think, in every location because I got a weight that home I can put on it. It's made to go around the tire of the car.
But okay.
We'll be able to use it on grass or pavement and stuff like that. So I went with one. If we want, we can get more stands later, but they're about $60 each. So it's probably better for me just to go to Lowe's and buy some metal. I have a welder. I can just weld with something that will be stage one for.
That beats a CNC machine.
Yeah, I was going to say he's got CNC, so maybe we'll rack his
work. Yeah, there we go. Everybody has a part to play. Okay, great. No, thank you, Sean.
I might bring them to the East Coast Star Party. They're supposed to be here before that.
That sounds great.
If they're here, look for the 15-foot flag when you're coming.
Put a little red flag at the top.
Yeah.
A vegan.
For an aircraft,
yeah. You can see it. It's like, oh, that must be them.
On that subject, or on a similar note, Sean, do you want to talk about t-shirts?
Yeah, so now we're doing
it. We're now in a new business. Now you can
t-shirt, of course.
Do you have a current or accurate number of the t-shirts right now?
I only have an accurate number.
I think there's a dozen t-shirts ordered for the East Coast Star Party last I looked. And what Jeremy and I want to do is order more t-shirts than what we need for the East Coast Star Party, like at least double, because we're going to make, I don't know where anyone's at, but we're going to be making these t-shirts. So our regular club t-shirt, we purchased a stencil maker, or a screen printer, sorry, about a year ago, and now we're about to use it. I've tested it this week. It works. So I'll be making the screen for the East Coast Star Party tomorrow, and going through that whole process, I think it's going to come over, and we're going to screen print the shirts.
Oh, that's cool.
So once we have the final tally on the 6th to make however many shirts for the East Coast Star Party, we'll do that. But then when we're doing like the boardwalk or these other events, we'll be able to churn out a batch of these shirts. And the price point comes down the more we order. So if we don't order extra now, we'll just throw them in the batch because what do you want, turquoise, I think? What you said
that was my random idea. Sorry. Turquoise.
Just so you know, there is a turquoise available, but we'll get something close.
Cheese.
It's called jade something. Is what they mean with color. I'm not giving colors. It's color division, but my wife says it is close. So we will. Essentially, what I'm asking is if we want to vote on ordering extra T-shirts right now. There's a local company that Kent and Robert have dealt with for decades, and they gave them a good deal, and they did better than what I'm getting online. But when I reached out to them before the last Star Party in the spring, the quote they gave me was not the quote they were giving Robert at Kent. So I don't know if they'll ever give me that good of a deal. We haven't talked to them since then. I said I was going to reach out to them yet, later. But and on top of that, we're still firing. I mean, when we were ordering the T-shirts for the East Coast Star Party, it was our costs were higher because we were having them do everything. Now we got the screen printer, and we'll be fine on the cost of T-shirts either way. But I would just like to order more because I'm stockpiling. And we have, how many do you think I told you, about 20 right now, at least?
Yeah, I think so. You get different sizes.
Yeah, we had, from the previous two times that we had the T-shirts done by Robert at his house, we have extra black and gray T-shirts, I think, right now. And they're various sizes. And I just want to keep doing that because then we can screen print. I'm not saying people will, you know, like you guys, when you want a T-shirt, hopefully we'll just have a public bar. But when we take them to the public event, we're just going to print various colors, take them out there, and see if we can augment our scholarship funds with them, you know, the general fund, things like that. So... That's the plan. That's what
Jerry's talking about. It makes sense. You just buy a bigger batch. We're going to use them eventually, even if you use them the next Star Party, you know.
Exactly.
And we just reprint them. So I'm all for just buying a big batch of shirts. Yeah, whatever you feel like you want to store at your house, whatever your wife will let you store at the house with all the other stuff you already store for the club.
I'll let you know when the show is full.
And you're out on the street.
Yeah.
got a question from Jeff.
Ink. About ink.
We have almost a full thing from black. In the spring, we bought a black one. It was like a 32-ounce one.
What about glow-in-the-dark ink?
Well, we're planning on doing that. I saw your message you sent about it. Jeremy had an idea about doing some glow-in-the-dark, but the screen printing machine we bought is a four-station thing. So this is our first time. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We're going to bring four colors on the same shirt because as I was testing it earlier last week, you make a mistake and they will shadow on the T-shirt. I just pulled it from a pair of T-shirts I had and was doing like a Saturn design I had made. So we just want to be comfortable with it and make sure everything's lined up because it has to be lined up perfectly. And Robert warned me about that.
We want to do that too. We want to do multicolors or glow in the dark. But right now, while we're still learning, we're focusing on single colors. And that ink is a little harder to work with from what we've read, and it's also appreciably more expensive. Which isn't to say that it's a bad idea when we have the system down, but while we're still figuring it out, probably better to use the inexpensive ink. But I do love where your head's at.
So, Sean, what is the color of the ink? In other words, are you doing white on the shirt?
We have black and white ink right now. We just purchased white because, as you can see, the color that we're going with is similar to that. And the white shows up really good on that shirt. That's why we wanted it. There is an endless supply of different colors. They know how they could be using.
And is that white or is that off-white?
This is white, too. That's white ink. Charcoal gray is that color's name. Who knows what they'll call it at the place that we're going to next.
We're also, for the East Coast Star Party shirts, we are standing by to call an audible if necessary. If the shirts arrive and they are appreciably different color than we thought, and black ink makes more sense than white ink, we reserve the right to make that change in on site without necessarily making anyone eligible for a refund on their shirt under all three instances.
Sean, do you need a motion to buy some more shirts?
Yes.
I think that we buy some more shirts.
Well, you have a number? Or...
assume we have 12 shirts, we should be getting at least probably 40, 50 shirts, I think. Okay. You know, and we're going to use them all. I know
how much per, how much per shirt?
It was 414, I think.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Second.
Are they dated? In other words, could they be used next year? Like,
no, these are blank T-shirts. Like, order. There's nothing on.
Yeah. So we'll print them, and the one we'll print as needed for the East Coast Star Party, and then the spare ones.
So yeah.
By 100, for
instance. Yeah. These shirts here. So there's no date on these shirts that we're gonna do, and we're gonna do just like this. Robert made that stencil that's on the front of that shirt already. We have that, which is good. I need to make one for the back that looks like about the design we've been going with, and it'll be good. And that's easy to make too. So I've already got the images actually made because I sent them to the company that made that.
Second motion.
Okay. There's been a motion and a second. I'm not quite clear on how many dollars or how many shirts that motion is.
$250.
That should cover it because I'm pretty sure you're right about the 200.
Okay. So motion to buy $250 worth of shirts for East Coast Star Party and additional spare shirts for club use. Any additional discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Great. Okay. Two more items of new business that I'm tracking, and then if there's anything else from the floor, and then I'll stop turning the mic camera around. Okay. The question has come up in chat and in person about the hot dog machine. Which Rich thought I was kidding about, but I really am not.
I thought you were our hot dog machine.
Okay, so that's a great point, right? So historically, the club president has the responsibility of being the grill master at East Coast Star Party. I'm happy to do that. I don't know if it was because my hot dogs weren't very good or because people want me to actually spend more time looking through my telescope. I'm not sure. But the idea of, hey, what if we had something that would keep things going? Maybe the idea was just that we need to be able to feed Kent at an appropriate rate. But the question of having a durable, long-term snack stand, basically, you know, like the hot dog rollers that you see at any gas station, 7-Eleven, et cetera, that we could put hot dogs for observing nights, not necessarily for grilling time, although it would be good to keep things warm, as well as potentially if we were feeling crazy, we could put breakfast sausages, taquitos, lumpia, what have you, on there so that we have snacks throughout the observing night. The idea is to get this primarily for East Coast Star Party. That does not mean it would be restricted only to that. We could potentially see if we wanted to have snacks at other events. I could see a route to us bringing it up
right here.
George's kitchen. Etc. I am apparently unable to share the screen right now. At least by the way I know how to do it. Rich, is that something that...
Green thing. Click share.
Click share? This thing?
Yeah.
I tried that.
You have the power.
But you have to have it
on the entire screen. And then
you have to have it minimized.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, then pick what you want to share.
I don't zoom much. Okay. So this board seems to be a good choice. It is an 18 hot dog roller with an acrylic cover. The nice thing about the acrylic cover, and this is the selling point to me, is that we can shut it and flies and bugs can't get in and feast themselves on our hot dogs. $180, not an insignificant expense, not a huge one either. I think it'll be a good way for us to be able to keep the dogs rolling, pun intended, well into the night.
Where do you plug it in?
We actually have space at the coffee mess tent where we are right there. There's plenty of power available on the observing.
There's a lot of power.
I move to spend $200 for the hot dog machine. That's including shipping.
How much is the 12-dog machine?
12-dog machine is about $150, $160.
You're going the wrong way. How much is 24?
Let's see. We do have a motion on the floor. 24 is 200.
I mean, so realistic, that way
it makes it much bigger.
How many hot dogs did you cook?
It's going to be lighting up there
now. On a standard night at Chipotle's, I think I was probably grilling about a dozen dogs. Most of those were for Ken.
He's not
but he was here. Dog is on point, man.
Right.
But I mean, this also gives us the opportunity, since this thing will cook sausages and other things like that, we could potentially heat up breakfast food on here. I know Gabe cooks himself bacon and eggs there, but people wanted to throw some sausages or something. Like, please don't cook eggs on the hot dog machine. there was a motion. There has not been a second. There has also been some questions about bigger hot dog machines.
And small.
And small.
18. Do 18.
I think that's good, too, because any bigger, I mean, we have to haul it around.
It's so. More space, yeah.
I'm going to second Jeff's motion for $200 for the $18 machine, including shipping.
Okay. $200 including shipping. I hope that's right. I think it's free shipping. Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm not going to order it now.
Yeah.
Okay. Any discussion?
We know where it's made.
All of them are made in China. I know. I felt horrible about that too. I mean, buying local means I'm grilling, so which is an option. All in favor? All opposed? All right. We're buying a hot dog machine. I'll take care of that. Okay. Sorry, I lied. There are two other items. One, there's a dew heater workshop. I've had four people that are interested in building a dew heater. I sent out an email about it on the groups.io to seeing if there is any interest. If we have the materials or the basket, thank you, Rich. I didn't click the button.
I got you, man. I got you.
Appreciate it. I'm the worst millennial. If there's any additional interest right now, we're looking at either doing a dew heater workshop next weekend before the Skywatch. And if you want to stop by, we'll do it in my garage, which is 5 minutes away from Northwest River Park. Or alternately, we can do one at the East Coast Star Party itself, which is where people are going to need dew heaters. Because if you're going to the East Coast Star Party and you do not have dew heaters, you are setting yourself up for failure. As many of us learned last fall, when the only thing that saved us was Jonathan's hair dryer. But it was still a good time. But yes, we are building resistor bridge dew heaters. Costs are going to be pretty minimal per heater because we were able to get pretty good deals on a lot of the big equipment. Think on the order of probably about five-ish dollars per heater. I'll math that out.
You put them in a sleeve or some sort?
Yeah, so they're going to be the resistor bridge dew heaters with one side is just electrical tape. The other side is weather stripping to keep it keep the heat sealed inside.
Separate.
Shrink to them. So you won't electrocute yourself on the heater. I mean, unless you try. But
it's the same design we did years ago at Jim Baldwin's house.
Yep.
And this still holds.
I need to bring my sewing machine. We'll do with the Velcro and strips.
Yep. Fair enough.
Can I add something? You need a new shield, a new heater rather, for the eyepieces and for the finder. And
yes.
The tail rad, there's all kinds of uses for this dew heater thing. It's not just for your objective.
Yeah.
So don't forget about that.
You can have one for your primary, one for your secondary if you have a dob. You have one for your diagonal if you have an SCT. Theoretically, we can do a ring for your correcting plate for an SCT as well. I've got a dew controller that uses RCA adapters. This design uses RCA connectors to make sure that you have something to plug in. If you don't have that style of dew heater controller, please let me know. If you don't have a dew heater controller and you need to come up with an alternative style for you, let me know that as well. I'll probably throw this up on the Night Sky Network as an event. I'm probably not going to advertise the location just because I don't particularly want to advertise my address, but anyone who's interested, just email me and I'll let you know. That way I can also make sure that we have the materials for you. It was, I guess, more of an announcement than new business, but there we are. The last item of new business before we turn the floor over to our guest speaker for the night is Bruce was talking about the Astronomical League. One thing that came out recently from the Astronomical League is the Royal Observing Society of Canada, or Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. Every year they put out an observing guide. I personally think it's a great book. They are $28 a piece. They have a lot of great information about events that are coming on, how you can do calculations for your telescope, just a plethora of information. If there is interest, we can do a bulk buy. It brings the per unit cost down by $2 per. So if anyone is interested in getting a RASC handbook, please let me know, and I will figure out whether we have enough interest to do a bulk buy. We just need 10 people. Otherwise, we'll just, anyone who's interested will get their own.
Want to count now?
Sure. Anyone interested off the top of their heads?
Well, how big is this thing?
It's about yay.
No, so
I should have brought mine tonight. I totally didn't think. Rich.
There you go.
Yep.
George and I usually get them.
There we go. All right.
I get a free version because I contribute. Go look at like 300 something. There's articles from here.
All right.
Yeah, in the beginning, in the first part of the book, it's got almost an education in astronomy. And then it's got a section for month by month. Events going on.
Yeah.
Then it's got sections for the planets, it's got a section for the moon, it's got sections for the sun, it's got sections for meteors. It's a wonderful tool.
One of the great things about it is that in the month by month section, it even has what the four Galilean moons configuration is. As a running chart over the course of the day, so or over the course of the month, so when you glance up at Jupiter, you can tell who it is just by looking at the chart, which is super neat. Tells you when Algol's at. Yeah, a lot of detail. Fun fact: a lot of the information that I put out in my monthly email about what's up going on, I scrape shamelessly from the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. Can I get a show of hands one more time so I can scribble down?
I'm sorry. What's the name of the book?
It's the Rich. What is the actual name?
Royal Astronomical Society of Canada Handbook. We call it the RASC.
Yes. Handbook. Okay. Thank you. All right. That is all I have as far as
planned. Online in the chat?
Oh, yeah. Do we have any hands in the chat? No. Okay.
Got one new business.
One new business.
2 weeks ago, a couple weeks ago, I received the donated telescope. And I don't know if anybody else got another telescope.
I also got a donated telescope.
I suggest we offer it to the club members first, and not we can convert it to a library. So mine's not very good. It's an old V4-inch equatorial mount. It's got all the accessories and everything. It's not in perfect shape. It's pretty dirty. But it's got a tripod and everything. Enough for beginners to do some good work. So I'll be glad to donate that to anybody that wants it. Or we can either.
Yeah, we have a method for people to donate scopes to us. We need a good method to make sure that we find them new homes. Otherwise, they just end up in people's garages. So,
you know, when they're beginner scopes, mm-hmm. and they're not trash.
Yeah.
If they're trash, do everybody a favor. You don't pick the scope up because sometimes you don't know what you're getting until you're over there. And I pick up a Tasco soap and a Tasco, and it's missing all the parts to it. And then I take it, I paint them and everything, and then I put it in the trash. Okay? Because you're doing everybody a favor when you're doing that. But if it's a workable scope, then you can advertise on Nextdoor, science teachers at schools. If it's a really good scope that an amateur astronomer in the club might like, then set that aside and ask here. As soon as anybody, you can get rid of those scopes. If they're workable still, reach out to the school. I mean, I just post on Nextdoor, and someone will come to my house and get it. Like, within a week, I'll get rid of it. So
we also could bring them to Skywatch, and if somebody shows up really fired up,
saying, if they're not good, everybody in this room mostly knows what a really bad scope is. Just get rid of it. Do everybody a favor and send it off for a block. Because all you're going to do is kill the hobby and give it to someone. Don't give them that scope. But there is some good ones, you know. If you want to take the time and take one of those, Celestron 127 EQs that's on that horrible mount, but the scope is decent, you can make your own dot base and put it on that, and then it's a good scope. You know, but you have to want to do that, obviously, too. If you do that route, you can go buy those brown base to make your own dial base. They have them made at Home Depot and Lowe's. It's already cut out. Just go get one. Make some walls and put it on there. That's what I did with my first scope, and it made it 10 times better than what came from the backer. So, but I would not do the library telescope with them, because unless it's a good scope like those little Dobbs we're using, those are good scopes that are going to encourage a child. If you give them a bad scope, they're going to have no problems. In fact, The ones that Chesapeake bought, what we probably should do is reach out to whoever's running the library system, make sure they don't buy any more of them. Same thing with Virginia Beach or any other city that's considering it, and just tell them, hey, if you reach out to us, we will help you get a good score.
Yeah.
You know?
No, a great point. Okay. It is 8:30, and our guest speaker has joined us. So I'm going to I'm going to pause our new business, although I think we're wrapping, and turn it back over to our illustrious vice president for an introduction.
Who's the man's name?
Lee Torgerson. I'm going to introduce Lee Torgerson. I see he's aboard, and he's about ready to talk. But before I let him talk, I want to tell you a couple of things. But before, so you'll get an introduction of what he's about. He and I went through got our master's degrees at University of West Florida. However, he got two master's degrees at University of West Florida. I only got one. Then from there, I think he went to Lockheed, worked at the Skunk Works on the SR-71. I didn't know anything about this until after he left the SR-71, but finally I did find out, and so because it was a secret thing. So he's got a lot of Lockheed stories to tell, maybe. And now he works for JPL. I know he's worked on the Cassini mission and the some other things. I'll let him tell you about that. He's worked on a lot of things, but one of his big deals is communications with spacecraft. So without further ado, I don't see him on here yet, but I will turn it over to Lee Torgerson, JPL, in Glendale, California.
Jack, can you shoot some screens on displays of this feature versus transportable box?
Man, where's that at? Yeah, I know how to do it.
Yeah, the display or...
Can I get rid of this?
Yeah, view, yeah, up there.
Oh, view, that's right.
There you go.
Oh,
that's
multi-speaker. I see, and he's right here with one of the DSN satellite dishes visible in the background. And usually has a Star Trek thing, because he's a Trekkie.
I'll
turn
it over.
There you go. Okay, good evening, everyone. As as Jeff mentioned, I'm going to share my screen here and so share my PowerPoint in a second. As Jeff mentioned, I went to work for Lockheed Skunk Works, worked on the SR and the TR-1 and the F-117, and then jumped ship, came over to JPL, and I've been at JPL 35 years now. And started out working on the Mars Observer spacecraft, was deputy spacecraft team chief, flew it to Mars, it blew up, which sucked. Went to work on the Mars Global Surveyor, which was the replacement for that, as the spacecraft system engineer. We got that one there okay, and it lasted many years. That was a success. And I worked on Cassini and couple other things. And at one point, I switched over to the telecom department from system engineering because I realized that radio people didn't understand computers and computer people didn't understand radios. And they were trying to put more and more protocols on the radio link to make better use of the radio links. And of course, the hardcore RF burns on their knuckles. Radio guys didn't think much of these computer weenies, and the computer guys just, you know, stupid RF guys. So I put together a lab to try to stitch both groups together and called it the Protocol Technology Lab. And we've spent the last 25 years or so testing different protocols over radio links. So I work with the DSN as well as with the computer science side of things. In 1998, we did the first interplanetary internet study funded by DARPA, and Vince Cerf, father of the internet, arranged for the funding for us. And 25 years later, it's now required on the LunaNet and MarsNet, and I'm still working on it. Haven't got sense enough to retire. But Vince's still working with us, and he's 85 now, 86. So things are in a big turmoil right now at JPL because of the NASA budget cut which essentially cut JPL's budget. The president's budget request cut JPL's budget by 50%. So they announced mass layoffs starting in October because the president's people have ordered NASA to start implementing the huge cut, you know, his budget, the OMB budget, whereas Congress and the Senate are proposing increases to NASA's budget, including maybe as much as 4% increase to NASA's budget, which would be great. And they don't see eye to eye with the president's staff on the skinny budget. So right now, it's like the wheel of fortune. You spin the wheel and maybe bankrupt will show up, or maybe $1 million will show up, and everything's kind of in turmoil. So I had a hard time pulling together a good pitch for DTN, for DSN today, because everybody that already had one in the can is off busy scratching their heads trying to figure out what the budget's going to mean to their staffing and what their next job's going to be, for that matter. So anyway, I threw some things together that I thought would be interesting, and I hope they are. You can stop me during anything I'm presenting and ask questions. So let's see if I... I want to hit share, and then I want to share this thing.
Excuse me, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you explain to the people what DSN is? It's
digital. I'm sorry. Good plan. Good. Yeah, we all live in a soup of acronyms, so it's the Deep Space Network. And what is this? Okay, allow. Okay, I don't know if you can you see that slide?
You can, yes.
Okay, so the Deep Space Network does three major things. It does communication. Everybody figures that somehow these big antennas have to be used to talk to Mars, and especially Voyager, which is way out there. It's like 40. I'll look in a minute here. I've got a chart on that. Mars is usually 8 minutes to 20 minutes one-way light time. So it takes 20 minutes when it's on the opposite side of the sun. It takes 20 minutes for a radio signal to get to a spacecraft on Mars, and it takes 20 minutes for it to get back. So you can't do handshaky-like communications. Everything is planned on sending a package of canned commands for the spacecraft to execute, and then you wait until it gets it and then hope telemetry comes back a while later showing that it got it and everything's okay. So that's one big function of the DSN. It also does navigation. You got to know where the spacecraft is. And so the same way you kind of azimuth elevation, you know, you can do that with your astronomical telescopes with the right ephemeris information. But we also do ranging. The angular information for where a spacecraft is shored up, if you will, by observing where known quasars are. They'll get some radio data from looking at a quasar, and then they'll slew the antenna over to where the spacecraft signal is at the peak, measure the angular difference, and that's a fairly, you know, it's pretty accurate reference for the angle. And then how far away it is, they use various Doppler techniques for ranging. Then the third function is they do radio science support. And radio science support means, what radio science is when you get an antenna and you get a scientist, and there's nobody in between the scientist and the antenna, and there's no spacecraft to talk to, the radio scientist guy will take over the antenna and do things like high-power radar imaging of asteroids. And so the whole solar system defense network that they've got going is conducted largely by the DSN. When things like extrasolar system objects come whizzing by, the DSN is used to look at those, and they can actually do radar imaging of those things. And then the other curious thing about radio science is, besides looking for gravity waves, they also will look at a spacecraft signal as it goes behind a planet. and the signal goes through the atmosphere, and they can see how the signal changes as it goes through the atmosphere of whatever it's going around, and the scientists can deduce some properties of the atmosphere like that. The DSN's got three stations around the world, Barstow, Madrid, and Canberra. And I'm going to show you a quick video, I guess. Let's see. What if I do share and share the whole? Desktop one. Yeah, if I just share the whole desktop, that'll be easier. If I escape this presentation and go to this.
NASA has robotic explorers all over our solar system and beyond. But how do we communicate with these faraway spacecraft?
Can you see that video?
We communicate with them using the big antennas of the Deep Space Network, or DSN. The DSN has three antenna complexes evenly spaced around the world in the United States, Spain, and Australia. That means that as the world turns, at least one antenna complex can always contact spacecraft no matter where they are in the sky above Earth.
Yep.
We're seeing a black screen with text.
Well, okay. That doesn't help at all.
Which daily habit of
stop that?
NASA has robotic explorers.
Pause. What are you seeing now?
Over our solar system. Maximize that.
Pardon me?
Maximize that video right there. See if that works.
Okay.
We can see it when it's small.
Maximize button on the end there.
Okay, let's try this.
But how do we communicate with these faraway spacecraft? We communicate with them by using the big antennas of the Deep Space Network, or DSN. The DSN has three antenna complexes evenly spaced around the world in the United States, Spain, and Australia. That means that as the world turns, at least one antenna complex can always contact spacecraft no matter where they are in the sky above Earth. Here you see the Goldstone Deep Space Communications Complex located in Barstow in Southern California. You're standing next to a massive 70-meter dish, which has a total area of approximately 1 acre.
Need that for Voyager.
This antenna was constructed in 1965, and along with the DSN antennas across the world, has helped us communicate with rovers landing on Mars, the New Horizons mission to Pluto, the Voyager missions to Jupiter, Saturn, and beyond, and more. The Deep Space Network provides the crucial connection for commanding spacecraft and receiving never-before-seen images and scientific information. This large antenna includes not only the 70-meter dish, but also a base that can turn to point it at any place in the sky.
Slowly.
The 70-meter antennas are driven by hydraulic drive systems using a 200-horsepower motor. That's the power of a car engine. The 70-meter antennas can communicate in S-band and X-band radio signals, which are two different types of radio communications used for talking with faraway spacecraft. To learn more about NASA's Deep Space Network.
Okay, I'm going to stop that. Someone once said that I've never liked NASA's PR videos, and someone once said that if NASA owned Colonel Sanders, they'd be advertising warm, dead birds. So, I apologize for some of that. There is a website that if you Google for, if you look at NASA.gov and look for the DSN website, it oddly enough takes you to the organizational structure and all the pretty pictures of the managers and who cares. And then there's a thing that says public. And when you get to the public, it's like, oh yeah, the public might be interested in this stuff. So it has some articles, and that's where I got this this video. Most of the complexes look like this. Is they have the big 70-meter dish somewhere, and then they've usually got three or four 34-meter dishes. And the 34-meter dishes are what are used for Mars. You switch to the 70-meter dish. If a spacecraft at Mars, for instance, goes into what they call safe mode, it gets scared, it gets lost, something broke. And oftentimes its dust has confused the solar sensor, so it doesn't know, the star sensor. It keeps track of where it is by a star sensor. And if the star tracker has some dust particles or something that gets it confused, it'll get scared and go, uh-oh, I don't know where I am, and it'll go into what they call safe mode or contingency mode. And this, what the thing does is it says, I don't know where I am, so I can't point my high-gain antenna to the Earth, because who knows where that is. So I'm just going to go on to my low-gain antennas, which are omnidirectional, and squirt out SOS that way. And the signal is so weak, you have to use the 70-meter dish to pick up the signal. And the data comes down at like 7.5 bits per second. I mean, we're talking really, really slow. Like with the Mars programs, with Mars Global Surveyor, if it went into safe mode, it would take a half an hour just to get one telemetry frame to figure out what's going on. And then you could send a command up to the low-gain antennas that would force it to relocate the sun and relocate the stars and get back into operation. So there's more to the DSN than just that one 70-meter dish, although it's a pretty phenomenal dish. Okay, on this score, that was these websites here, and that was the YouTube link. And then there's SCAN website. SCAN is Space Communication and Navigation. And SCAN is the top-level organization within NASA that handles the deep space network and other communication networks. And so they've got a reasonably decent website to look at communicating with missions. And I'll send these slides to Goldie. If you don't want to write this down, you can pass them out. With the help of ChatGPT, it pointed out three unique things about the DSN. It can transmit up to 500 kilowatts in X-band. And X-band is up in the 8 to 12 gigahertz range, I think. S-band is more the 2 gigahertz area. But X-band's pretty high frequency, and that amount of power is remarkable. And that's what they use for communicating with Voyager and for radar imaging, things that are coming near the Earth. We've got, we talked about the 70-meter antenna, and they already talked about the global coverage. Other things to look up when you have time is more details on this ranging. As astronomers, this could be very, very interesting. Yeah, I've always been totally amazed at how they can figure out where a spacecraft at Mars is down to like a few meters in all directions. I mean, they're really, really accurate. So they can send very, very precise commands on exactly when to burn the engines and affect some sort of maneuver or aim the cameras at some known feature. So the SCAN website will have information about that. Also should talk about the, I think it was Galactic Solar System Radar. I always just heard GSSR. And the radio science studies. And of course, it found three interstellar objects so far. The first one was Oumuamua, you say it. Oumuamua,
yeah,
that makes sense. Oumuamua, the big elongated, which is still fascinating, and still people are still fascinated with that, of course, and studying it. Then a extra solar system comet came through named Borisov, and probably after some Russian discoverer. And then Atlas, which was discovered just this July. So that's some kind of interesting facts about the DSN. Telling you about the DSN in 15 minutes is like trying to describe an aircraft carrier because there's so many different features and bells and whistles. So I thought what I'd do is I just walked over to the Space Flight Operations Center, or SFOC, Space Flight Operations Facility, which is a historic landmark, blah, blah, blah. This is where they run the DSN for all three stations around the world. And the control room, there's a visitor's gallery up above the control room where that looks like this. And it's very, very dark. My camera didn't compensate quite for that. But when you look down on the floor, there's a monitor that's always showing who the famous visitors are that come, because everybody and his brother wants to come see the DSN control center, and they always get their picture taken. I'll talk about this more, but those are all the antennas we got online now, and you can see the little squiggly things that's transmitting up and down. They alternate between different antennas right now at Gulfstone Antenna 26, which is the Gulfstar 26, that's a 34 meter dish, and it's got this kind of strange substructure holding it up. Right now the wind's 7 kilometers per hour there, and it's pointing at Odyssey, and so this display kind of rotates around. This is more for the public, and then down here is where the controllers and the people that actually control these antennas live and do their work. Go Dave Go is something they put up as a joke, because when the budget got cut and the lab director bailed, and they enlisted a new lab director who's got a lot of DOD connections, hoping that Dave could go to Washington and stir up some more work from DARPA and from the DOD for JPL, so we don't have to lay 2,500 people off. They put up a mission timeline. He's been in charge for 94 days, 16 hours, 43 minutes, and 50 seconds. Then the ACE is the antenna control engineer. So these guys all back here control the general operation of all the big antennas, and they take care of things when the Klystron overheats and they got to call up Madrid and tell them to go fix the darn thing. And the antenna control engineer is the interface between the DSN and the mission. And so on Mars, the Mars missions, we'd always talk to Ben Toyoshima, who was our ace. And what we did with Ben is we would call up Ben and go, How's it going? Our signal's a little weak. Is the pointing okay? And he'd look into that for us. Or we would send him a file and say, hey, Ben, we need to have you send this file up to Mars Global Surveyor at 14:52, you know, sometime. And he would go ahead and do that. So with a lot of missions, this gets to be a pretty busy place with a lot of computer monitors. This is a little shot from the visitor's gallery into the area where you see the pictures of, when Mars sample returned, Mars Science Lander landed, and everybody's got the matching T-shirts, and they're all jumping up and down and hugging each other when it worked. That's the little area off to one side that they put aside for the spacecraft teams and VIPs. And then when the mission's actually running, the spacecraft teams are in another building sitting in cubicles. And there's someone working there. I don't know who that was, what she was doing. But so I think this is the next to last slide here. The Madrid, Gulfstone, and Canberra antennas, they show you which antenna is talking to who. The big one at Gulfstone, 70 meter at Gulfstone, is talking to Voyager 1. in Madrid. They're taking a Siesta Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, the JWST Space Telescope. We get all their data and then provide it to JWST. OSIRIS-REx, and this guy's program I worked on quite a bit with the Koreans, called the Korea Pathfinder Lunar Orbiter. And so it turns out the Near Space Network in Goldstone, I mean, on the East Coast in Maryland, handles the tracking data relay satellite antennas, the orbiters that the ISS space station talks to. And when Earth orbiting missions go over the Earth, they go past ground stations that have 20 meter dishes and 18 meter dishes that are small enough to slew very fast to be able to track the spacecraft as it goes from one horizon to the, you know, to the other in about, you know, 8 minutes. So it has to slew pretty fast. These guys can't quite do that, but for the lunar missions that are coming up, they were going to build more antennas for NS, for the Near Space Network, to use for the lunar comms, but there's no budget for it because the price, it's running at $180 million an antenna. So they shelved that idea, and they're going to use the DSN for the next few years to support all the lunar missions. So we're talking to LRO and the Korean Pathfinder Lunar Orbiter, which we tested their comm system in my lab for about 2 years. I still have a headache listening to a variety of dialects, shall we say. Goldstone, MRO, Maven, Mars 2020, and Canberra's talking to, I forgot what Soho, it isn't the place in London near Carnaby Street. It's it's another mission, and Juno is at Jupiter. And then these guys are kind of relaxing at the moment. I'll show you, the last thing I'll show you is a website where you can see this thing in real time. This is an interesting chart, and this is the last one I got to bore you with, is Voyager 1. These are things that they're looking at right now. Voyager 1's pass is on day 247, which is today, I don't know, which is yesterday, starting at, and this is GMT, so, you know, starting near midnight, and then the pass goes all night long until 5:55 this morning. And so this is the different pass start and end for servicing these spacecraft. And they rotate around, so we have continuous coverage for most of them. And then this was the interesting thing to me, is that this is the year, month, and date that the day of the year, hours and minutes, actually, the date of when this thing launched and when we first started covering it. So Voyager launched 48 years ago and 15 days, 9 hours, 2 minutes. And so some of these spacecraft, and this is a big concern in the grand scheme of things, if you're concerned about deep space science, some of these guys, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and you know, some of these guys are 20 and 24 years old, and they're still up there rotating around and relaying data from the landers. There's nothing up there except our missions and a couple of European Space Agency missions that can relay data from the landers. And they're all getting a little long in the tooth, so it's just really hard to sell Congress on doing mundane things like providing for communications around distant planets when everybody's all, you know, hopped up on going to the moon. So Europa Clipper is at the moon Europa, and it is 40 minutes one-way light time. So I had to do a simulation for the Europa team to take signals that they wanted to send, commands that they wanted to send to Europa, and run them through my lab and delay them for 40 minutes and then simulate an answer and then delay that for 40 minutes and send it back to the spacecraft team people so they could practice what it's like to send a command to your spacecraft and then go to lunch and come back and hope it worked. So, okay, the last thing I'll show you is somewhere. Oh, that's the scan website. which was NASA.gov communicating with missions. It's nothing like public outreach organization. But anyway, they've got a lot of good information in here that is very interesting about the science and what we're doing with the deep space missions. And then the DSN now, of course, they can't keep it a consistent web naming convention. So it's EYES, as in OHOS, eyes.nasa.gov/apps/DSN-now. And I haven't tried this, but I'll try it right now. Yeah, so that's what DSN now does. You just click on that, and it shows you in real time what these antennas are doing. And they show communications in both directions, because sometimes these antennas, they're just sending commands up, and other times they're just receiving data down, and there's uplink traffic to acknowledge some of the data coming down. And so you can view the antenna, you can view a picture of some spacecraft, and you can view a world map of where Gulfstone, Madrid, and Canberra are. So with that, that's about all I was able to put together and show you, gentlemen and ladies, if any are present. I can't see the room.
Can they pull duplex and transmit and receive at the same time?
What they've got a capability of doing full duplex for one spacecraft, but then they have MSPA. They put a bunch of extra receivers up in the dish, and put the receivers up in the dish, and they can do full duplex to one spacecraft, and they can receive only for five other spacecraft, I think it is, or maybe it's five total. I have to check on that, but they've got it, and that's been working out pretty well. So when you're going to Mars, the beam width of the antenna is wide enough to pick up a bunch of things at Mars. So you can be communicating full duplex with one guy, and then you could be listening to downlink data from the other four. And that also holds for Jupiter and Saturn, that sort of thing. Sadly, Venus was one of the missions. Just try not to look at the president's budget and the whole controversy of what they canceled when they canceled the Science and Mission Directorate at NASA. Is the organization that funds all the spacecraft, Earth orbiting and deep space, and all the scientists and all the different missions. And they got their budget cut 50%, and which it's an absolute travesty. I know I have four good friends that have gotten jobs now in New Zealand, and they're waiting for their work visas to jump ship and move to New Zealand because they get jobs with Rocket Labs and University of Wellington. And a couple of the scientists have gotten professorship jobs there. And I guess they're all Hobbit fans, or sheep fans, so they decided on New Zealand. But apparently it's a pretty nice place. And then this summer I was in England talking to University College London and Imperial College folks and some folks at Cambridge, and they're just salivating in Europe because they all figure they're going to be able to hire laid off NASA engineers and NASA scientists in particular. And both the UK and the European Union are supposedly, one professor told me that they are trying to change their laws to make it easier to get work visas for people from the States to come in and work in Europe. So I don't know. It's write your congressman, write your senator, say a prayer, keep your fingers crossed. That's all we can do to keep this part of astronomy and exploration of the universe intact.
That's outstanding. Outstanding job, Lee. Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Anytime. If I have more notice, I could put together a better show.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us and a great presentation. Every time I hear something about Deep Space Network, I'm more impressed. I didn't know some of those capabilities that it has. 500 kilowatts.
That's amazing.
Any questions from the room?
Do you know how they scan the asteroids? I can see the ranging with the Doppler ship, but how are they scanning asteroids?
They use the antenna as a radar. So they do radar waveforms, and they just pulse wave, you know, they just send radar waveforms out, hits the asteroid, bounces back, and they get enough resolution to oftentimes see a lot of details about the asteroid and what the surface is made of. It's hard to see a lot of these things optically because they're black until they start forming a tail, and you know, you guys know all that stuff, but it's mostly a radar technique that they use, and that 500 kilowatts comes in handy.
Any other questions? Any questions from out in Zoom land? All right. Checking chat. Okay. Well, I got a comment that great talk, and that's absolutely true. I can get a round of applause for.
Thank you, kind sir. My pleasure. And now I think I'm off to In-N-Out Burger.
All right. Well, you can send the chat to Europa Clipper, and maybe it'll be ready by the time you get that.
See you guys later.
Right. Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right. So that is all that we have prepared, except for the probably everyone's second favorite part. I hope everyone's favorite part is the featured presentation, which is the door prize drive. Did anyone not get a door prize ticket? All right. Jeff, would you like to share with the group what you brought tonight?
Yes, indeed. Donation from...
What is the door prize?
What's that?
What is the door prize? Share it with
okay.
Yeah, when Zoom lands there.
All right, wait, let me put it on Zoom land.
Jeff's about to share it.
All right. Can y'all see this case? Y'all see the brand? Wait a minute, I've got to show you the brand.
Nickel?
No. N-I-K-O-N. Nikon? Is that it? Nikon? Oh, Nikon.
Oh, Nikon?
An SLR. With an Nikon lens.
Wow.
That's just part of it. Extra battery. Telephoto lens. Nikon. I don't know what brand from. I don't know what this is. I don't know. Telephoto lens. Anyway, got a lot of accessories in here. Some filter holders and all kinds of stuff. This was donated about a month ago to us, and he says, I hope we'll give it to somebody with a good home here. And I know there's plenty of people that got a good home for this, right?
So. Looks nice. I'm going to have to try to make next month's meeting.
That's right. That's right. There's another one coming next month. It's not as valuable.
All right. All right. You can do the honors.
All right. 367-2188.
Take the next one, please. I got one. I got two.
Thank you. All right. 2184. That's me.
All right. Very perfect. Yeah.
Yes.
The perfect thing for it.
I appreciate it.
All right. So, with that, that is all we have for the evening. Does anyone have any last-minute thoughts? In that case, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Someone posted it was a hot dog machine under the food door.
That was before we talked about the hot dog machine. So it has been approved. It will be ordered tomorrow. I mean, we could stay here, but I need a motion to adjourn. All right, there we go. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?